Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Market Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle, joined today by news editor Emma Powell. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good. And tips editor Algie Hall. How are you, Algie?
Jolly good.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. A rare treat.
Oh, wow. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Right, so this week's issue is largely devoted to investment trusts. So they're going to be talking, I presume, in a lot more detail about the cover feature in the Personal Finance Funds podcast, which they will record tomorrow. But Algie, you've contributed to that.
Yep.
You've gone all Phileas Fogg on us.
Yes, my annual trip around the world in investment trusts.
Indeed. And you've even got as far as reading the book.
Yeah, I have, yeah. And I've got a quote in there, which I think relates particularly well to stock screens.
Well, let's come on to that in a minute. That's really the main thrust of the cover features. Let's dive straight into news. It's been a busy week, as it has been for a number of weeks.
It has. It's been very busy. Well, it's kind of Q3s and all sorts of things going on.
Right. So, what's caught your eye this week, Emma?
Big news this week, obviously, with SSE. I think it came out on Tuesday. Obviously, we've had a lot of back and forth amongst the parties on capping energy prices. It looks like finally SSE has buckled under the pressure, some would say. It's agreed terms, actually, between it and Npower of merging its retail business with Npower. Basically, for cost efficiencies, they say, and to kind of reduce CapEx. I mean, really, I'd see it as a sign of, you know, they're just trying to get in before this price cap happens, which last month the government published a draft bill.
When you say they're trying to get in before it happens, what, they're trying to flog this part of the business before things get worse?
Yeah. The price cap would be on standard variable tariffs, which is kind of the most common tariff that, you know, people are on. And they have the highest exposure. You know, it's higher than British Gas, Centrica's British Gas. So they're going to be badly affected by this. So what they're doing is this newly merged business would be listed in the UK separately. It would be majority owned by SSE shareholders. I think it's about 65.6% owned by SSE shareholders at the moment.
About 55. It's a very accurate about, but
yeah, they also had half years.
Yeah, they did, which we've covered in this week's magazine.
Yeah,
I mean, I thought the interesting thing here was that the idea that this deal was going to go through any time quickly.
This will be drawn out. Of course, it will. They've got to get so much regulatory approval for this,
and there isn't a lot of support for it either in terms of government.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, why do you want to? Surely you're just reducing competition even further, and they've been trying to increase competition in this area.
Indeed. So as we quote in the bit in the results piece, Ofgem, who I think Tom must have spoken to when he wrote this, have basically said a merger would not be in the consumer's interests.
Yeah, exactly. I find it. I mean, it's a bold proposal, I think, but it's. I'm not sure whether it'll go through. They've been trying to increase competition.
They have.
And these are massive retail companies, Npower and an SSE.
Yeah, so we would suggest not banking on that deal going through anytime soon, but we've still got the shares in the buy.
Good income's a bit more secure, you know, you get a good dividend. But yes.
Which is reasonably well covered.
Yes, its coverage has improved. I mean, it's always been slightly thinner than others, but it has improved. But yeah, this will run, I think, this merger.
I've got to say, not selling our Centrica shares has been a regret that I have had. I mean, I look at the share price of these companies. I mean, the political risk was always there. We should have just sold them. Mm. And we didn't. Is it going to get worse from here? Can it possibly get worse from here? I mean, these shares have been on a downward trajectory, not just SSE, but Centrica, the whole sector, for a while.
It has been. And I mean, they have published this draft bill now, which suggests, obviously, it's more likely, you know, it's the most tangible bit of news we've had that the price cap will come in. SSE is slightly more insulated than Centrica just because they've got the wholesale and obviously the whole infrastructure business.
In terms of the business as a whole, rather than just the UK.
And plus, if they get rid of, well, SSE shareholders are still going to be majority owning a UK kind of retail company. But I don't know. I mean, you also buy these shares surely for the income, not just for the.
I wonder, though, do we need to start preparing ourselves for an earlier-than-expected general election the political wrangles going on this week?
Indeed. I mean, that does sort of throw the cat amongst the pigeons because, you know, the Tories are trying to manage this in what you could suggest is a reasonably market-friendly way. God knows what a general election could bring.
We'd definitely bring scare, wouldn't it, until we knew the outcome.
In which case, you could see the share prices getting much worse of these type of companies. And actually, I think you could see them getting a lot worse for a number of companies. Travel, you know, domestic transport, for example, which we've been quite bearish on for some time.
Well, yeah. Well, we could be right politically, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll see.
No, we could be, but yeah, no, indeed. We generally don't go too deep into the world of politics here on the Investors Chronicle. But yeah, no, it is kind of ridiculous what's going on in the background of managing the country. What are your stories? Let's talk about Aldermore.
Aldermore, yes, the latest challenger bank.
Because we had all these challenger banks coming to market and it was all great, and now they're all sort of disappearing again very quickly.
Well, there was Shawbrook, One Savings Bank, Aldermore. Those were the big three. And, you know, they did very well. Obviously, came off a bit around the referendum, but did very well. Managed to kind of ride out the whole tax relief changes on buy-to-let mortgages. Very well. Obviously, Shawbrook was bought out and taken private by its majority shareholder, Pollen Capital. And now Aldermore, the board have recommended an offer from First Rand, which is actually South Africa's biggest financial services provider. It's an all-cash offer, 313p. Shares are trading around that now. So you've done very well. We had it on a buy tip. Again, if you followed that buy tip, you'll have made, I think it's about 70% up. So.
Not bad.
Yeah, it's all right.
So the question would be, why are they selling out now? I mean, they haven't put up a lot of resistance, let's put it that way.
Well, no, actually,
they put up no resistance.
No resistance. Yeah, they put up no resistance. Philip Monks, the chief exec, is going to stay on as this, as leading the Aldermore business, which First Rand are going to combine their motor finance business with, because they've only got a very small exposure to the UK, so they really want to, diversify a bit more into the UK.
So they want to get involved in UK motor finance?
Well, that'll be part of the business. It's second-hand car finance. Yeah. But obviously, they'll have Aldermore as well.
Because we have talked about the UK motor market quite recently. It's not looking great.
No. But they'll be doing that. I mean, one presumes it will be taken private. Obviously, the Aldermore were going to pay a dividend also this year. Now, they've pretty much said, we're not going to pay that dividend.
That entirely depends upon how this takeover progresses. We've seen, obviously, with some other takeovers that have become protracted, dividends that were due that we thought we might not get, you do get because the...
Yeah, although they did actually say, Aldermore, because any dividend that's declared now they've come out with this offer proposal, will be kind of subtracted from the actual price you receive. So they said, well, I think somebody at the company said to me... we don't believe, obviously, it'll be in the best interest of shareholders because you kind of get that firm cash. I mean...
Which sounds sort of bizarre, but there you go. Okay, so, but they haven't got much resistance. What's their exposure to buy-to-let?
I think it's about half their loan book. It's definitely the fastest growing part of what they do. It's really why they've managed to grow their loan book so much.
Should we not be worried, though? I mean, okay, we're not worried. They're going. But buy-to-let has obviously lots of hurdles, lots of challenges that have been introduced over the past few years in terms of government policy. The housing market is looking a bit shaky, and we've had some figures out around the London market today, which are not really that encouraging.
Yeah, that's what I think I say in the piece. It's about 1.8 times of net tangible assets, the takeout multiple, which some people have said, that's not overly generous considering it's traded above that, historically. But actually, if you consider the housing market maybe becoming overheated, they've also got exposure to asset finance. I know that's an area that some lenders are getting out of because, risk, it's gotten very competitive and risk isn't being priced properly within that market. So if you consider that it has exposure to some of these areas and you have concerns about that, then actually it looks quite decent. The fact they're paying 1.8 times the tangible assets for it. I think this is a fair deal for shareholders, to be honest.
You have to find your new sector and there's not much left of it.
Oh, exactly.
I mean, talking of housing, Persimmon on the same page as the Aldermore story. I mean, the house builders have had a difficult week.
Yeah, Redrow. Come out today, Thursday. They're saying a similar thing with the new sales. Obviously, Persimmon saying their new build sales are kind of flattening off. Jonas has actually downgraded them.
Has he now?
Yes.
That is a, see, Jonas is you know, he's
he
ridden,
loves
he's
House
ridden,
Builders.
He's ridden this. He's ridden this hard. And over the past few years, we've said, come on, Jonas, this is getting silly. No, he's stuck to his guns, generally yeah. speaking. And he's been right, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm. I think what he found, he said it was quite, you know, quite a thin trading statement. And though it was more about what they didn't mention. So anything to do with dividends and things like that, that he found maybe a bit suspicious. So yeah, up on the tip. But I think he found now that sales were kind of flattening out that it was time to withdraw.
Wow. That's, you know, the Jonas selling the house builder signal. That's a big one.
And I mean, the market, so I mean, it's been nervous for quite a while, hasn't it?
Well, we
a few
have.
Years.
We
you've
have.
Seen, you've seen them, house builders move around a lot because they've been at top evaluations for the sector, and the sector is cyclical, so people are just waiting to see if things turn down.
People forget about cyclicality, don't they?
Yes, but I think with house builders,
you've seen enough cycles, Alex. You know what happens.
You get to think it's just normal, don't you? Because you just think, well, it's always been this way that I can remember, forgetting that obviously. Definitely, might just be nearer the top of the cycle.
It's definitely not always been this way, from what I can remember.
Maybe just from a personal point of view.
I mean, they are better managed than they were, to be fair, at the time of the last crash. They've had a great kind of last,
you know, it's almost 10 years, isn't it? Since the credit crash. The conditions that were established after, in the rubble that was left, they've built on very... very nicely.
That's a long cycle, though. 10 years is a long cycle.
Yes, yeah.
Maybe we are seeing the end of it. Who knows?
Who knows? That's the thing. Who knows? It's we'll know after it's happened.
Indeed, we will.
The sad truth.
Indeed, we will. But there are signs that there is general nervousness around.
We've also got the budget, obviously, coming up in 2 weeks, so you don't know if there'll be any sweeteners in there for them then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we had obviously some sweeteners recently in terms of the extension of Help to Buy. But yeah, how much more can they actually really do? We do need lots more houses in this country.
Well, yeah, it's not the demand issue that's the problem, is it?
No. Okay, the house builders, be careful. Challenger banks, you don't really have to worry about it anymore.
Well, you haven't got many left, to be honest.
what else have we got, Emma?
Foot Asylum.
We did talk about this briefly last week. We've got some more meat on the bone this week. Harriet's had a good look at this. I was sceptical, but only because of a strange dot-com hangover around trainer companies. But Harriet's looked at this in more detail, and she's a little bit sceptical about the latest flurry of retail IPOs that have hit the market.
Yeah, it's difficult to know. Actually, coincidentally, Foot Asylum, it floated, I think, this way, or started trading this week, but its shares are up about a fifth already in the first week. But, I mean, both Harriet and I think... or, you know, think it's a bit of a crowded marketplace. I'm not really sure. It is hard to stand out. I mean, they do just sell trainers.
Yeah, people like trainers.
They do, but...
God, we talked so much about trainers last week. However, I think the interesting thing to perhaps consider here is that we wrote a piece about IPOs quite recently. I thought one takeaway I really, really... that really, you know, stuck in my mind from that was, as you get towards the end of an IPO cycle, your quality starts to deteriorate. The businesses that you get, they can sort of fall into the me too category. They're not the high quality ones. And I think Harriet's kind of exploring that idea with this.
Interestingly, from that perspective, ASOS was one of the few dot-coms to float after the bubble burst, quite soon after the bubble burst. And that's gone on to do great things from that perspective. But yeah, now it's the flavour of the day, along with companies like Boohoo, etc.
Boohoo seems to be doing okay, though.
Yeah, Boohoo's doing
Hotel Chocolat, Jules is another one. Both quite recent floats, both done very well.
I still don't get Jules.
Yeah, it's kind of like...
I just don't get it. I mean, I know them. I know their shops. I occasionally go on holiday to Southwold. I see them there. I don't understand their products. I don't think I'm their target customer.
No.
I think not.
No, I think the other thing Harriet's pointing to here is that it's become quite incestuous, this sort of retail marketplace.
Yes, there's a lot of... Between JD Sports, Foot Asylum, Quiz... There's a lot of NEDs and kind of people involved.
All the same people.
Same names.
Same
families, actually.
Same families.
Children.
Yeah.
Some of them involved, so yeah.
And Harriet's exploring Mike Ashley's influence on the UK retail landscape at the moment as well, which is extraordinary. Yeah. It's extraordinary. Yeah, I think maybe we've had some results this week from Marks and Spencer, which were okay.
They were a bit ropey.
Sainsbury's today, bit ropey.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe this long threatened consumer slowdown is really starting to happen now. And yet you've got companies launching into it in terms of new IPOs. Be careful. God, is this the be careful episode? Okay, yes. Let's throw all caution to the wind and go on a round the world journey.
Yes,
in all sorts of ancient forms of transport, but not balloons.
Not balloons, no. Phileas Fogg did go on a sledge which was powered by sails. Which,
okay.
He jumped a broken bridge on a train, which was described as like flying. But I don't think he ever actually left the ground for a very long period of time.
Surely the physics of that are impossible.
It's fiction.
Which you read in full, just to make your piece that much better this year. So your contribution to the Investment Trust feature, as it has been for a number of years, is basically looking at some of the best investment trusts that give you the kind of exposures, a global exposure, going through all the regions that Phileas Fogg and Passepartout would have visited,
through.
But not in a balloon. Why is it that he likes balloons? Why do we associate Phileas Fogg with balloons?
Well, I kind of think there's a crisp packet, a famous business reinvention. which they rebranded as Phileas Fogg crisps, and they used a balloon to put them in.
Which is perhaps something to do with the film, isn't it? The old David Niven film.
Possibly.
In which he does travel by balloon. But that's nothing to do with the book. Anyway, let's talk about the screen. What you have actually done as well, you've taken his fictional returns from this.
Yeah, I went all out this year.
You went all out.
I compared the fictional 80-day cumulative return from the screen with his 80-day return, after costs wasn't.
You really are an extraordinary geek. This is why we love you.
You could do this with other works of fiction. Could be a theme.
Well, Phileas Fogg, though, he's a very interesting fictional character because he's the kind of archetypal investor type that people would ideally want to be. Well, you know, as investors, probably not as people, but often people look to fictional characters, Dr. Spock from Star Trek, as being kind of this supremely rational being who could hold his nerve unemotionally when markets are gyrating.
The perfect investor.
But Fogg is very much that kind of unemotional, rationalist type person. A real risk taker as well. But But anyway, enough of the fiction.
Right, enough of the fiction. let's get to the fact, indeed. So basically, this portfolio is not about taking risks. These have been well screened with your usual rigor.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the screen it's in no way does it try to keep risk down. It's but it just looks at two key, you know, theoretical determinants of future performance, which are momentum and value, and then blends them, and then goes around the world selecting investment trusts on that basis.
Okay, so let's talk about a couple of them. So eight investment trusts.
Eight investment. I think the most interesting thing probably from from what John Barron's actually also been saying this feature, and what more people have been saying in general, is that when I did the screen of all geographies before kind of just choosing ones from different geographies, all the highest rated trusts were most of them were investing in the UK. And amongst those, it's really UK smaller companies trusts, which are very domestically focused, attractive.
When you say highest rated, you mean that they came out with the best scores in terms of the screen, but not rated in terms of being expensive?
Not rated. Yeah,
just to clarify, it's a
ranking system, yes, this screen. So they were the most highly ranked.
Like sort of Greenblatt type approach.
Exactly. It borrows from some of his methodology. But they've been performing well, but they look relatively cheap based on their discount to the net asset value that the trust holds.
Why would UK trust be cheap right now?
Well, who can think? But I mean, funnily though, last year we had a similar situation with lots of European investment trusts. And the screen picked out a smaller company's European trust, and everyone then was thinking about all the politics, all the upcoming elections, the possible impact of Brexit, and everyone was hugely scared of Europe. And obviously, those fears can turn out to be a reality in the future. So, I mean, it's not surefired, but often the market can be proved wrong in its fears, and like the actual underlying momentum, if that disagrees with them, what the valuation's telling you about the fear factor, it can be very profitable. With those European trusts last year, the TR European Growth Fund, this fund that the screen selected, it put in a stunning performance, about 53%, I think it did in just a year, which was incredible. And actually, at the time, interesting, the manager of that fund couldn't believe how the shares of the fund were being valued, and he was busy borrowing money to buy back his own stock.
When you say couldn't believe how they were being valued, presumably at a huge discount.
Yeah, he thought this is ridiculously cheap. The stocks that I'm buying are ridiculously cheap. What do I do? I'm going to borrow some money and buy a whole load of my own shares. And he's shot the lights out as a result.
So this year, that torch passes to the UK.
That's one which looks most correct. But then again, if the fears are substantiated, but people overdo things in terms of when there's an obvious something obvious to be pessimistic about, the market tends to overdo it.
The same is true. I mean,
tends to.
It's a cognitive bias. It's classic cognitive bias.
Yeah.
I mean, and it works at both ends of the kind of valuation spectrum.
Yeah. When
there's something to worry about, people worry too much. When there's an opportunity to be grasped, people get too enthusiastic.
Yes, but also equally with some stocks, when we look at things like earning upgrades, what you see is quite often people don't get enthusiastic enough. People come hold off, and then they get over enthusiastic towards the end and start pricing in the kind of forthcoming upgrades. And then if a company doesn't say I'm beating expectations, a la JD Sports early in the year. Which just said, I think it was meeting expectations. The shares tank because the ratings got so ahead of itself.
They did tank, but then they came out with some decent numbers fairly shortly afterwards, and the shares took off again.
Yeah, yeah, and also, you can say the same with companies like Ashtead. Lots of these Ashtead, the hire company. A lot of these companies which have been pushed to quite extreme valuations on the fact they upgrade. They're just very sensitive to any news which is even vaguely pessimistic, but it means there's a long way to ride as the market kind of gets into a state of fever.
I mean, what struck me about some of the trusts you've picked out is that they are, I mean, even some of the kind of more popular areas, they're not overly expensive, so you can buy the assets of these trusts at a discount to their market value at the moment. I mean, that's quite extraordinary given we are in what is, some may argue, the tail end of a very long and over-exuberant bull market.
Well, yeah, but I mean, again, it should say, the discounts. Also, anyone who's looking at these trusts, they should check the discounts when they get the magazine, because they can move around quite substantially. And so hopefully the value will still be there that's in the tables, but they need to double check. But discounts have come in general, though. And I mean, the thing with discounts, they can always go wider. So, you look at the REITs at the moment. You have some REITs now. I think Intu's trading on a 50% discount or something. So, you can look at a 10% discount and think, there's value there.
And, well, a 50% game,
but you've got to always remember they can blow out really quickly when things go wrong.
50% discount is quite extreme.
Yes, yeah. And you normally have other things going on in the background, like, there being, quite a lot of gearing or something like that.
Well, I mean, what are the factors you're looking for? So, I mean, as I say, discounts seems to, they stand out, the discounts on the trust you've picked. They all seem to be trading at a discount. I mean,
it's a prerequisite for the screen that the trust will only qualify if it's trading at a discount. But what it's looking for is a discount, or it ranks stocks higher if the discount is high compared to its history, because different trusts will have a different average discount just because they'll have different characteristics. So people may be scared of investing in emerging markets, so all those trusts will have a wider discount than something investing in the US, let's say. And so what you do, you look at where the discount is compared with its average over the last year in the case of this screen.
Yeah. I mean, some of the trusts that I know that are very popular, things like Scottish Mortgage, for example,
yeah,
rarely you will find them trading at a discount.
Yes, yeah. And so it'll look cheap when it's kind of on a 1% discount on the measure that is used in the screen, which is called a Z score, which is a statistical.
Which is confusing thing. Because there is another Z score, which is something completely different.
Which is for companies and about their ability to pay their bills.
Yes. No, I've looked at that before. Okay. So, Algie, give us a pick.
Well, one that I was particularly... There are actually two in here which kind of caught my eye, particularly Standard Life UK Smaller Companies, run by someone called Harry Nemo, who's run it for ages.
He recently presented at an event of ours.
Yeah, he uses a kind of stock screening system called the Matrix to heavily inform what he does.
Love that.
and his track record's phenomenal. And he's been doing brilliantly this year as well. So, but anyway, he was the top performing UK trust.
And you can still pick that up at a nice little discount.
Well, yeah, you can. I mean, again, just, you know, double check it. Readers should double check the discount that it's actually on in case it's moved in the interim. But yes.
Well, yeah, I know it's in his top 10 holdings there. He has Fevertree Drinks as his largest holding.
Oh, yeah. He's not scared of, a bit of earnings momentum like we were talking about earlier. Well, that's a key factor in his in the way he screens. Well, Fevertree, NMC, that's really shot the lights out this year.
It's had a good week this week, actually. Yeah, up 10% this week. No, Fevertree, you mentioned in 7 days, Emma. I mean, yeah. They had some new numbers.
Upgraded again. They've upgraded their full-year profit.
And you can buy the shares for only 60 times earnings.
What a bargain. you can buy the tonic for only 70 times what the supermarket has got. That's not entirely true. I exaggerate.
We could create a new ratio, though, on that basis.
Yeah, my favourite company in the world, Adams, has just launched its own range of tonics.
Yes, yeah.
And this, to me, is a big worry about a company like this. I mean, how easily replicated is what they do? Is this going to be a flash in the pan? Are new competitors going to come in and eat some of what they're doing?
I suppose the hope is, because they're so capital light and they don't actually... from what I know of them, they've outsourced all the manufacturing and things like that. They could potentially just roll the brand out across the world with similar success.
There's still a lot of room, I know, to grow in North America. Julie was saying, who covers the company.
Yeah.
So even if they do saturate the kind of UK European market, maybe they can go across there.
Yeah, any brand that becomes big in the States is, you know, gold. Yeah. But I mean, obviously, yeah, will it do it or won't it?
I've got to admit, I've gone off gin a bit recently. I think I've just drunk too bloody much of it. Anyway, okay, yeah. And you mentioned you like two. What's the other
one? Well, the other one which stood out for me was the Henderson Alternative Strategies Trust. I did look at the discount on this one. It looked like it'd come in, unfortunately, quite a bit since I actually screened it. That's the thing. It can just be, you know, a day or two, you know, two, and it can just move about.
But that's fine. If you put it on your watch list and just keep an eye on the discount and take the plunge when it hits a level you like.
Absolutely. But the interesting thing about this is a very diversified portfolio, which may explain why people have been less interested in it recently, because the diversity means it may, you know, underperform a pure equity portfolio because equity's been doing so well during the bull market. So potentially overlooked. It's got a continuation vote coming up. It does have a discount target, which when I wrote it up, it wasn't meeting. And it's invests in a lot of really quite interesting asset classes, which could, if the markets turn, may protect investors.
So it could be in a kind of insurance policy type investment.
It's got an insurance quality element to it. It invests in long and short hedge funds. It's reduced, but it does have private equity as well, although it's been reducing that recently. So it could be more resilient if markets fall. Definitely, it looks that way. And I mean, you know, who knows if markets will fall, but they will in the end
at some point.
But I mean, there are substantive reasons to be nervous about markets, I think, at the moment.
Well, I would tend to agree. I presume you've read my editorial. It's a required reading at the Investors Chronicle.
Well, especially Bitcoin is. Yeah, we've got.
Yeah, well, I kind of expanded beyond Bitcoin this week, but I spoke to someone this week who, you know, he's a well-known investor, and he's basically saying, yeah, the equities. He said, and I think he's probably right, that there is a degree of complacency about valuations.
Oh yes.
We
all know valuations will not cause the market to fall, but they will contribute to the fall when it does happen, and also. They are something which means a fall. If something else happens, a fall can happen. They're the setup, if you like. And we haven't got many of the other worrying factors that you'd look for a market fall. But we definitely have an issue with valuations in the market, and that's enough to do some pretty bad damage.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I noticed this week that I thought was really interesting was the launch of this new futures contract from the ICE,
for the FANGs.
For the FANGs. And, you know, I mean, the FANGs, yeah, they of course, they're massive, interesting companies. Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix. I use them. Of course, we all do. Mm-hmm. But there is a kind of suspicion that the investors have got a bit carried away. ICE said that they'd launch this futures contract and index in response to customer demand, and it basically would allow you to keep buying them on margin. And that kind of guy I hear, that just terrifies
me.
Yeah,
no, it's scary stuff.
That really does terrify. Having said that, Apple this week have come out with some numbers.
Yeah, push the shares again to an all-time high. So it keeps going and going and going.
Mm. But Apple as a share has never looked expensive. Never have they looked expensive. And I guess that's the reason we continue to back them.
Yeah.
You know, we would actually encourage an even more concentrated approach to buying the FANGs, which is don't bother, just buy Apple.
Hey, I think, well, in terms of our recommendations.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
But, some of the valuations are very high, and, you know, there's a lot for those businesses to do to ultimately in the future justify them. But I mean, you know, amazing companies, obviously.
Oh, and Twitter's one of the FANG Plus companies in this index.
Really?
I do wonder about that company. I mean, you know, we all use Twitter. But, you know, is really increasing the character limit from 140 to 280 like a game changer? Actually, another one of the companies in the index, talking to Scottish Mortgages, is Tesla. And Tesla's had a pretty rough couple of weeks. Share prices looking a bit shaky, and Scottish Mortgage have been obviously under pressure to justify their investment there. But hey, who knows? We've long held a view on electric cars is that it might be somebody else, one of the mainstream, that wins out in the end. Who knows?
Who knows? Also, it's easy to be sceptical about, you know, companies with high valuations, which are kind of making their own markets and going, you know, doing something new. And it can be harder to be, you know, the optimist who's saying it is going to continue to be as good as it is now and better. And Scottish Mortgage have made huge amounts of money for their investors.
It's been a great investment.
Being that optimist.
A great investment. And lots of our readers love it. I mean, you know, we do a survey every year. We ask people what investment trust they love. Scottish Mortgage always comes out on top.
Yeah.
Always comes out on top.
Yeah, and it's got a very clear view of what it's doing.
Yeah, and it is more than just Tesla as well.
Yeah, of course.
Of course it is. All right. Thank you, Algie. It's fantastic. A really interesting feature. And it's actually encouraged me to go off and read 80 Days Around the World.
Do it. I can recommend it highly.
I've got to get through this Japanese crime novel I'm reading first. It's going to take me for ages. It's going to take me a while. It's heavy going. Thank you, Emma, for your insights into the news this week. As I say, the main thrust of the magazine is investment trust this week, and they will be talking about that in more detail tomorrow on the PF and Funds podcast, A World of Wealth, Trade the Globe with Investment Trust, which you can do. you really can do. They can give you amazing exposures. Plenty more in the magazine. Phil Oakley has completed his three articles on dividend investing with a look at companies with the potential to grow their dividends, which is perhaps one of the most important approaches to dividend investing that there is. John Barron, as Algie alluded to, has updated his portfolio with a particular look at the UK and its prospects. Plenty more in the news section. Results are cranking up again, so there's quite a lot to get to grips with there. Thank you for listening. Pick up the magazine in all good newsagents, £4.90, or get on the website and subscribe. And we'll be back next week. Thank you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.